listening to the Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, where we discuss myth, math, spirituality, philosophy, and much, much more. www.thesamebook.com. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the show once again. I am so glad you could join me. To start off, I just wanted to say thanks to everyone who made it to the Sync Book Summit a few weekends back. We had a great time, and it was so wonderful to connect with such warm, good-hearted, intelligent people. Olympia is a beautiful city, and I got to meet some people who I've wanted to meet for a long time, like Scott Onstad and Alan Ebedesa Green and James Evan Pilato and all the other wonderful people. And it was such a treat for me. So it's always wonderful to when you get to meet somebody who you've known from afar or met on the internet, and they turn out to be just genuine, super cool people. It's just really refreshing. So the conference that was a pretty small gathering went really well, and right now we're looking at doing another conference next year in Portland, though this is just in its infancy right now, but it looks like it'll eventually happen, and I, of course, will keep you up to date with what happens with that. The videos from this year's conference will be coming out in the next couple of months, and I have already gotten a sneak peek at a few of them, and they look fantastic. So stay tuned for that. I will let everyone know when they are released, and I know you'll dig them. So to let everybody know, I have some videos in the works that I plan on putting out in the next month or two. One on the dollar bill, the Star of David, and juggling are just a few that are in the works that I'm really looking forward to. I've had to put the lecture series on hold for a bit to focus on getting this podcast up and running, and have been just busy with life and work and all of that. But I plan on putting myself to task in the ensuing months and provide more content for your viewing pleasure. I was recently a guest on the Higher Side Chats. It's a podcast out of San Diego, California, I believe, and we had a great time over there. Greg is just a killer host and an all-around good dude, so please check that out. It's at www.thehighersidechats.com, and you can find that on iTunes and Stitcher and the like, so go there and subscribe. I also wanted to give a little disclaimer here about this podcast. My goal in this podcast is to bring people on the show that I have been influenced by or have been inspired by, and give these people a platform to promote their work and talk about their research and findings and passions and get a glimpse into these people's minds. But I do wish to say that doesn't necessarily mean that I always agree with the guests. And I want to be a gracious host and appreciate everyone's perspective. And I think in every show that I've done, there has been a point or two in which I disagreed with what somebody was saying, or took a different approach maybe to something that they were speaking about. But ultimately, I think this is a good thing, because I know I've been wrong in the past and will continue to make mistakes on going forward with my own research. And discernment is quintessential. And I especially say that for what I am bringing to the table and the work that I am engaged in. I've made mistakes. I've screwed up. I've been misguided at times. But this is all part of the learning process. And this is a process that we're all going through. So nobody has all the answers. And only by working together can we, as a humanity, overcome our differences. No matter who comes on the show, I would say that we have much, much more in common than we have differences. And a lot of those minor differences that we have in the, quote-unquote truth community, or people that consider themselves seekers, if you will, we tend to over-exaggerate those differences, those little schisms, and we tend to make mountains out of molehills, essentially. And I yearn to find the commonality between people and find out all the things that we agree on first, and then sort out those minor differences later. So just a little disclaimer for as we move on with this show. Really looking forward to the upcoming guests that are coming on. I just booked Gregory Sams and Ezra Bell, Randy Powell, the poet Holly McNish is going to come on. So we're going to get to hear from a lot of different perspectives, a lot of different interesting minds. So have discernment, do your due diligence, and investigate this stuff yourself. So alrighty, that is enough of me ranting. Let's get to the show. Tonight's guests are the comedians Benny Wills and Kevin Kostelnik of the Joy Camp, and the musical guest is Portland, Oregon's The Druthers. This show is brought to you by the Sync Book Radio. Check out all the wonderful podcasts, 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Middle Chamber, and Synchronize. More information about Sync Book Press, Sync Book Radio, or Sync Book events can be found at www.thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends, and please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website, and consider setting up a monthly charge, as it helps us keep the lights on and helps keep our microphones humming. And as always, thank you for your support. Tonight's guests are Benny Wills and Kevin Kostelnik of the comedy troupe The Joy Camp. The Joy Camp is a group of satirists living in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and every dimension you can wormhole yourself into, specializing in raw satire that tears down the social norms downloaded to the RFID chips lodged into our brains. Like the Robin Hoods of YouTube, Joy Camp goes after the rich, mainly interdimensional reptilians, the Rothschilds, pure royal inbred bloodlines, the U.S. government, and the underground Jewish gay allegiance, and gives to the poor, the 0.01%. And obviously from this bio that they have provided me, have a fantastic sense of humor. Joy Camp has been featured extensively on Alex Jones InfoWars as well as on DavidIke.com and numerous other alternative websites. Fans of Joy Camp include Russell Brand, Roseanne Barr, Jesus, and you. So without further ado, let's get pious with the Joy Camp. Kevin and Benny, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate you guys taking the time.
Hey, thanks for having us,
yeah, buddy. Man. Glad to be here.
Yeah. I've been a huge fan of your work for a while now. A few months back, actually, I was introduced to your work through Cameron Wilcher over at Sacred Geometry International. So I got to give a little shout out to him. So thank you, Cameron.
Thank you, Cameron.
Yeah, thanks, Cameron.
He does such a great job just connecting so many different people, and I'm so glad he's around because he does so much work for Sacred Geometry International, which is a great site, and he introduced me to you guys. So thanks so much.
Yeah,
so
like the truth movement agent.
He is.
Yeah, he's awesome, man. I love Cameron.
I think we're going to find out that he works with the CIA eventually, though, so.
Yeah. Chill.
This is a comedy show. Don't everybody, anyway. So yeah, to prepare for this interview, I spent last Saturday going over your videos, and I think I watched literally all of them, and it just gut-busting hilarious. I mean, I think I'd watched the Astrotheology one and then the NSA iPhone one, but then I ended up going through all of them. Just hilarious, guys. So, and you guys are doing something really unique with this brand of comedy. How did you guys get starting? How did you guys start getting, you know, combining conspiracy and truth and, you know, occult and all of that stuff?
Sure. Should I try?
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, we like to have a good time. It starts with that. I mean, we like to be creative and funny, and then we also happen to be truth lovers or truth seekers, and we just marry the two at a certain point after years of sort of wondering how to contribute to the overall sort of movement itself.
Yeah, I mean, we were friends for a long time. I mean, we were roommates for a long time. We went to school together, and while on one side of our lives we were filming videos, the other side of our lives we were like learning about what was really going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And it took a long time before we figured out to put those two things together. A really long time, years and years and years. And when it happened, it was organic and almost accidental, the way that it just sort of all came together.
Yeah. And once we figured it out, I mean, it was a huge revelation. It was so obvious what we were supposed to do, what we were supposed to be doing. And yeah.
It just took one video, our public service announcement, conspiracy theories video, our very first one.
And then from there, it just started rolling, huh?
Yeah. So we did it for fun, really. I mean, it was just kind of like, just for the hell of it. And when we finished it and watched it back, all of us were kind of like, there's something more to this than just fun.
Yeah, because we realized that there was a serious lack of humor in the awakening process. I mean, these issues and the things you uncover are so serious and so evil in a lot of cases. It's hard to remember that you can still laugh at things. So we figured out immediately, like, this was not only fun and a great outlet for us, but also pretty much integral to, you know, reaching a larger audience and waking other people up.
Yeah. How long have you guys been doing this?
I mean,
as far as the Joy Camp is concerned.
Joy Camp, it existed for like two and a half years, I guess.
Yeah, we launched in March of 2012, and now it's August 2014.
And we've got 60 or 65 videos or something
that
we put out in that time.
So you're preparing for the apocalypse. And
I know. We wanted to just get out everything we had.
We had a lot of apocalypse jokes throughout
it. Yeah. Who are you guys influenced by, like, as far as comedians, like contemporary and, you know, the past?
Man, well, I think that for the two of us, the ultimate is probably The Simpsons, I think.
Okay. Interesting.
Amongst a lot of others, but really a lot. We both grew up at the right time for The Simpsons. And it doesn't take much to, like, walk around an apartment to see that it's stuck with us all these years.
Yeah.
But also, like, George Carlin, Bill Hicks.
Yeah, those guys in particular.
Love Monty Python, love Dave Chappelle. Mm-hmm. Louis C.K. we really like.
Sure. Yeah, because these guys really kind of stepped out, have like biting commentary, social commentary, as opposed to just cracking, you know, dick and fart jokes and stuff like that.
I wouldn't mind if Louis C.K. went a little further, but I do like him.
I like him. Bill Burr does every now and then. Not many other people now do, it seems like, that at least have a big audience, you know.
Yeah, but those are our primary.
Those are the main ones.
Off the top of our heads.
Yeah, okay. Cool. So you guys have been working together. So you've been friends, roommates, and working together on the Joy Cam for about 2.5 years. So, I mean, I've played in bands before, and, you know, I've collaborated with other people before, and I know that tensions can arise. I know that, you know, you can get in fights and things like that. I mean, how do you guys – I mean, do you guys get sick of one another? I mean, Benny, or you're like, God, this Kevin guy's just a dick. You know, like, I mean, how does that – how do you guys fare with that?
I don't know. I don't think we've ever had any kind of fight. I mean, if there's ever like a tense moment, it's only because both of us both want the best out of whatever we're doing.
Sure.
So we want to make that happen. But we usually are able to find some sort of like combination of ideas, and no one's ego ever really gets involved. And
yeah,
there's never really been an issue. We do work very well together.
Even with the rest of the gang too. I mean, Tony and Delman and Nick and Michael and like everyone just kind of gets each other. We've been friends for a long time, and
we all have the same sense of humor, right? And we're all good at what we do, and no one's trying to take credit for something that they don't do. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
we're a well-oiled machine.
And you know, I think that one of the biggest parts of why that is because we understand ultimately what the message is at the end of the day. I mean, we like to be funny, and we like our videos to get a lot of views, and we like to do things like this, but at the end of the day, we know when we're making a video, we're always trying to say something in the video. So everyone can always kind of unite on that, I feel, with the group. And everyone's just pretty cool, so.
Yeah, did you meet all those guys? Because everybody in the video, it seems like you guys are just all friends. We're like, hey, let's shoot some video. I mean, and everybody's like they're just real characters. Like, I mean, Tony Carrillo is his name. That guy I just look at that guy, and I'm just like, I just get a laughter out of that guy.
He's the one who kind of brought us together, I guess. He's actually here right now.
Yeah,
he's laying on our couch.
He's right here. He's right there.
Oh.
Say hi, Tony.
Hey, Tony. How's it going, man?
Not that anyone's gonna see.
That's all right.
Watch it's for you.
This is a fun show. We're gonna have fun. So.
Anyway, so Tony met Kevin at the
we were projection,
and it was love at first sight, right?
Yeah, instantaneous. No, actually, it took a while to become friends with Tony. He was very quiet.
But I met Tony doing theater in junior college, and Tony worked with Kevin, so Tony kind of brought the three of us together. And that was back in I met the both of them in 2003, I want to say.
Yeah, sure.
And then fast forward a few years, I met Delman when I was in grad school, and Nick also. But I didn't know Nick until I went to Burning Man with him, and we really bonded at Burning Man. And then came back, and the group of us all became friends and made videos.
And then the fifth Beatle is my brother Michael, who films everything.
Or the sixth in this case.
The sixth Beatle in this case, yeah. Cool. He's behind the camera all the time.
So who is there one of you or whatever? Or is it just kind of a group effort that comes up with the initial idea for the video? Or is it just...
Yeah. Inspiration strikes in all kinds of ways. I mean, I think we've all had ideas for... We've all inspired a video on Joy Camp.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's...
It's been a collective effort, huh?
Yeah. It is, yeah, pretty much. And then we just jam on it together and then edit it and watch it back and make some tweaks and then get it online.
Cool. You know, they say, like, laughter is the best medicine. And, I mean, we seem to be living in kind of a very sick world right now. Like, there seems to be, like, there's a lot of things that are wrong. Obviously, that's one of the impetuses, as you guys were saying. I mean, I myself try to remain lighthearted about a lot of these things, but a lot of times it's hard to stay positive. And so I guess when does it, you know, when does comedy stop for you guys, and when does it turn into the, God damn it, I'm pissed off at the, you know, injustices of the world?
That's
a great question, because particularly recently with the Israel-Palestine situation, I was really affected by it to the point where I was having panic attacks and, you know, very frustrated and angry and upset and crying. And so there are points when it really, you know, the reality of the situation is, and it was also really hard to find a silver lining for me in that situation, to find like, okay, what about this can be turned in the positive so that we have something that maybe, you know, people can learn from or something. And that was really hard to find, and continues to be hard to find in that situation. I think that the best thing that can come out of it is other people seeing and be like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. This shouldn't, this isn't right. And therefore serving as a, you know, a way of waking people up, just like 9/11 was to me. But I digress. Then we got, then we turned it into a video, and that was therapeutic. So taking all of that emotion and frustration and anger and all those feelings, and then being able to put it out into a funny video, you know, doesn't solve the problem, but sure is a, you know, a sort of a good way to come out of the funk that I was in, and and hopefully, you know, help other people.
Yeah, being creative helps deal with hard situations like that, I feel like.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's hard because it's not much time goes by without thinking about what's going on over there in everyday life if you're awake to what's going on in the world. So we put out our recent video, the Emmy video, and
I was just going to say, because you guys addressed it directly in that video at the end, and it was like, you know, and you were kind of putting it into Hollywood's hands in a way, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, we had conversations about what happened to Javier Bardem and Penelope Cruz, and how they came out, spoke out against it,
against Israel,
Sure, yeah. And then immediately there was other Hollywood.
Well, John Voight said you should hang your head in shame.
Right.
And just that mindset. I mean, I just can't comprehend how somebody can feel that way. I mean, I really relate more to this table that I'm touching than to that mentality, to that idea, to that sort of interpretation of reality.
Right. And then we had a little Facebook sort of tiff with this person who is basically calling us anti-Semitic before we made the video. And, you know, you got to see the way the conditioning was working through the arguments on people, and the way that it's been working for so long. And I guess between that and the feelings that we had inside for what was happening over there, and then the stuff that was going on in Hollywood, and when we talked about making this Emmy video, we just knew that we wouldn't be doing any justice to ourselves if we didn't call out the biggest thing that's going on in the world right now.
But we also presented it in a way that wasn't angry or that wasn't sad. It was more, you know, what points can we stress just to show simply the reality of what's going on, the truth behind the situation, and just comparing the quote unquote rocket fire between the two.
Yeah.
Right. Here's Hamas rockets. First of all, here's a side note, I dare anyone to find footage of Hamas rocket fire. For making this video, I searched for about an hour looking for any kind of footage of an actual Hamas rocket. There's some shots of fires here and there, and they claim that that's from Hamas, but I couldn't find anything. There's nothing.
Yeah.
This is the photo. You know, everything is photographed these days.
On the other hand, it wasn't hard to find footage or images of bombs hitting the Gaza Strip.
So that's the approach we took. We showed the difference in, you know, the missiles or the rockets or whatever, the bombings from either side, and used that as our angle.
Right.
Took all emotion away because people don't want to listen to someone who's yelling at them. And we learned that obviously very early on. So that's the approach we took, and hopefully it comes across.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the media plays it like it's a level playing field, you know, and yet Israel's obviously the superpower there. So even if the, you know, it's like, I see the absurdity as well. It's just like, it is.
I don't have to explain this to anybody. It's so obvious. I mean, it's just unreal that people believe, you know, the official story.
Yeah. So who do you guys follow as far as like your news outlets now? I mean, obviously you guys have to follow, that you have to watch Fox and things like that just to keep up on the absurdity side, right? I mean, the propaganda side. But I mean,
we have to.
Yeah, if we're going to put something in a video, you know. and then, of course, sometimes Fox News or things like that come up online for people making points and including it in their videos. But no, we don't have cable. I mean, we watch Max Egan is probably one of our mutual favorites.
Max Egan's great. Yeah. I'm actually going to hopefully try to get him on the show. So
he's my favorite.
I can listen to him, you know, every week.
but as far as, you know, news, I mean, I feel like I'm at a point now where I have my moments where I search for a particular information and I have people that I go to for it. But it's at a point where most things that happen, I can sense the reality behind the lies immediately without having to you know, figure it out or like deconstruct it. Mm-hmm. I can, it's an intuition now. I know when we're being lied to. I know which situations are contrived. I can just feel it. So it's not like getting the news anymore. It's more, I've been awake, quote unquote awake, for so long, I can just see it now. But I do go to Max Egan a lot for sort of to feel relaxed and sort of take a deep breath. We love Henrik and Lana over at Red Ice and the interviews they do on Red Ice Radio.
Yeah, Red Ice is awesome.
Red Ice is killing it right now. If anyone, everyone should go over to Red Ice after this and listen to some of the recent interviews. They've been killing it.
Yeah, they're awesome. And then I don't know, man. It's just been sort of a roller coaster over the years, you know. There was a time when Benny and I were watching every David Icke lecture that there was and calling each other and talking back and forth. There was a time when, you know, I paid attention to
Alex Jones.
And that time is behind us now.
That time was about 5 minutes one day 8 years ago.
Yeah. And I realized I
was like, wait a minute, he's making me more afraid. All right, I'm out.
I feel worse now than I did watching Fox when I was 19 years old.
I'm shivering with fear now.
Actually, I never watched Fox. I take that back.
You know, it's. I mean, I know you guys have been featured on Alex Jones and the, like David Icke and things like that. I mean, how obviously these guys. There's a lot of people out there that are putting out a lot of really good information, right? But then obviously there's a lot of guys that are. I mean, even like David Icke, it's like he's putting out a lot of really good information. But in my opinion, there's a lot of things that he's just freaking wonky on. I mean, how do you guys disseminate between? I separate the wheat and the chaff, if you will.
Well, like I just said, I mean, I think for me, it's more just
the feeling,
trusting my gut on certain situations, and then of course, if we choose a particular topic or event to focus on for a video, then we go all in and get all the perspective so that we are not, you know, delivering misinformation to people. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like everybody's partially right, you know, and try not to take anyone, 100% as gospel, you know, and just take what feels right and still analyze that. And I don't know.
You just
kind of sift your way through. It's like rowing down a river, you know,
you gotta be smart and you gotta be street smart and you gotta like, you know, make sure people are backing up the shit that they say and, you know, look for the claims and the evidence to support what people are saying before you go and start spreading it around too. Cause you know, I've been guilty of doing that in the past, but,
I was just going to ask, is there any video that you guys have done that you look back and you're like, oh, I could have took a different angle at this or, you know?
Good question. Is there a video?
Man. okay. Probably. Well, probably.
One video that I think...
Give you another year, right?
Yeah.
Back in the first year, some things were very scripted and some things were very loose. And now we're at a point where things are still loose, but we definitely have at least like a blueprint to work off of.
Sure.
And I look back on a video like our Conspiracy Guy episode 2, The New Age. And there's some stuff in that video that I feel like to really nail the New Age, because I think that there is a lot of it's really misleading movement. We could have nailed certain points a little better and then maybe backed off of a couple, because I'm actually a spiritual guy and I buy into some of the stuff. I just think it's a little too turn the other cheek for me overall. But, you know, a little tweaks in there that I watch it sometimes and I'm like, yeah, you know, we could have changed this, but nothing big.
Yeah, I mean, it comes to a point where you just got to let it go and put it online, because if I didn't put it online, I would probably keep editing it over and over, changing
and just kill it, right?
Yeah, until you know, I went crazy. So at some point, we have to detach and then just put it online and see what people think about it.
Yeah, but other than that, I mean, I really can't think of anything. I mean, some of the ones in the beginning also, it's the quality. I'm like, well, we could have done this maybe a little better, but yeah, as far as the message goes, no, I don't regret any of the truth or whatever you want to call it, issues during the videos.
I mean, I'm kind of glad you're saying that, because when I watched through them, there was no like major point that really stuck out that in any of the videos where I was kind of like, oh, guys, what are you doing there? You know? I mean, yeah. So I commend you on that. That's very cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man. And we've been unplugged for a very long time, and we take things light, or we're lighthearted, but we are smart.
Right. And when you decide to do something that you love instead of waiting around for, you know, somebody to just give it to you, and you don't have the first fucking idea of what you're doing and you just jump into it and start doing it, you just learn as you go. You know, you learn from your mistakes.
Yeah.
When I was young, I remember I worked on a job with this guy who we were filming a band, and I was helping him film. And he told me that. He said that he didn't go to school, that he just, everything that he learned on a job by making mistakes. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do with all our videos. You know, we make a video, we make mistakes, and the next time you don't make those mistakes, so we just get better and better. And
experiential learning, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we're learning as we go. And I'm on the other end, most of the heaviest research I do comes when we make videos.
Yeah, exactly.
That's when I really dive in deep, because we don't want to put anything out there that is like misinformation or wrong or steers people in the wrong direction. You know, we like to toe the line, but we want to make sure we're smart and true about what we're doing.
Yeah.
So when you guys, okay, so you said, you know, that, you know, Benny, you'd mentioned that it was like, oh, I'm awake, or, you know, I'm a spiritual person or whatever right now. And then you said, you know, that you're doing a lot of research. I mean, who are you guys influenced by as far as modern day researchers, and then as well as like in the past? I mean, I know that you've mentioned, you know, Manly P. Hall, you know, obviously, right, like that. I mean, who do you guys draw from? Besides me, of course.
Manly P. Hall was a huge find for us.
I mean, huge.
When we discovered his lectures and his writing, I mean, it's a whole new ball game.
I find it insane that a lot of modern scientists or modern philosophers aren't going to his work, just because of how extensive he's covered so many different issues, you know,
topics. What I love about it, right, and something that I was just reading like a really short biography of him. There's really not much known about him because he wasn't out there trying to make himself famous.
Mm-mm.
Everything that he was able to understand and all the information that he garnered, he applied it to himself. It all came back to the self for him, and I love that. I mean, he has the work. He created a body of work, but he wasn't, you know, I guess he figured people would find it on their own or whatever, because he basically took all of this knowledge that he gained and applied it towards himself and everyday living and living a good life and being a good person and, you know, creating that ripple with himself, starting with himself. And I really identify with that. I like that.
And it's also amazing that sort of some of the resistance to Manly P. Hall when people are bringing him up, like he's an occultist or a Satanist.
Mason.
There's a very weird, like, knee-jerk reaction to Manly P. Hall for the people that have at least heard of him but don't actually know his work, you mm-hmm. know? So that's been kind of interesting because we mention him a lot, you know? We really, really want to make people aware of this guy.
Yeah.
And I just read a book recently based off of one of his lectures about this guy from this guy named Boethius from
good.
400 AD, the philosopher. So I've really been into that too lately.
He has a lecture out there where he talks about the story of Boethius. And what's that lecture called? Do you remember? Is that the one something about love?
Yeah, I don't remember.
He has a love section.
Love of truth, maybe?
Yeah, the love of truth. That might be it.
Or maybe not, but it's...
Yeah, it's somewhere in there. He has a lot of recordings.
But as far as now is concerned, like, I really have fallen in love with Max Egan. And in the past few years, I got into the habit, whenever he's on, that is, to listening to him every week, listening to his podcasts.
We listened to a really good interview with John Lash on Red Ice a couple days ago. And, you know, I always hold to it that I think Jan Irvin's one of the best researchers out there. That guy knows his stuff. I don't know. I mean, Richard Grove, Tragedy and Hope, those guys are pretty awesome.
I dig those guys a lot, yeah.
I love Richard and Lisa. And I don't know, it just comes in waves, like he said. You know, I can look back 10 years ago and see who we're listening to, and it's just been like this roller coaster of sort of following along with people. And it's always funny because the ones that turn out to, you know, the ones that you don't really like have the initial cling to, years down the road later, you still don't. And they kind of tend to be the ones that you didn't really buy their information anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So you just got to kind of follow your gut, like he said earlier on them, I think.
Yeah, so you guys said you started in like 2003, and that, like, what was like the? I mean, for a lot of people, I'm guessing it was 9/11. This seems like this was a major awakening. I mean, was that a major awakening for you guys?
Yeah,
that was the what's the phrase, the straw that broke the camel's back.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean,
it was like a baseball bat though.
Because I've been asked now so many times, you know, when did you wake up? Right, that question seems to come up a lot.
Yeah,
and I feel like, dare I say, I was one of those people who was always kind of awake. Like, as a kid, I was always thinking, you know, like, well, wait a minute. I was always questioning things and thinking about outer space and, you know, the pyramids, and always really interested in, you know, stuff that was against the grain, crop circles, all kinds of stuff, the JFK assassination. And then when 9/11 happened, this is pre-YouTube, we didn't have the kind of immediate analysis and breakdowns of events like we do now. So when it happened, it was such an overwhelming, traumatic experience for everyone. I kind of went along with the story, even though my gut was that something was awfully wrong about it. There was something so wrong about it in particular moments. Like, I remember Colin Powell on the day saying, well, this is obviously an act of war. I remember thinking it, you know, as a 17-year-old thinking, what? War? This is just terrorism. This is just some yahoos who flew a plane into a building. Mm-hmm. And then I remember watching Trade Center 7 fall down and thinking, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. It looks like controlled demolition. But then, you know, we got swept up in college and whatnot and, you know, moved forward with our lives. And it wasn't until some little video came our way about the Pentagon. And it was like this, you know, typical sort of conspiracy theory video with like heavy bass and sort of dark music. Yeah. But it showed these pictures of the Pentagon that I'd never seen, showing the inaccuracies of how a plane couldn't have fit and there's no wreckage. And it was as soon as I saw that, I was like, all right, I'm in. I want to know everything. Yeah. So I was obsessed.
And we were knocking on our neighbors'
doors. We were in the dorms.
Come over and check out this video.
Showing everybody this video. It's like 7-minute little video. I think it was called like Hole in One or something.
Something like that.
And Loose Change came out shortly after that. Right. And then it was all downhill from there.
Yeah. And fast too, man. There's no time to even put on a seatbelt, you know?
Yeah. I mean, talking about 9/11 and talking about the conspiracies, quote unquote, that are being perpetuated all over the world, it seems like, you know, there's like some sort of group, right? An NWO, Illuminati, whatever, you know, Skull and Bones, whatever the hell it is that, and it's obviously these people knew that when they crashed those planes in the buildings or had this done, that the people in the internet were going to see this, right? I mean, with the immense amount of technology and things like that. And it seems like to me that it was like almost like the sole purpose of the event was to create this disparity between people, because you were going to have the truth seekers that were going to look at this, right? Have all the video, all the footage, you know, look at all the science to it. And then you were going to have the quote unquote patriots that were going to say, oh, look at those crazy conspiracy theories. And it almost seems like this was what it was done for. It was to create this division through humanity. I mean, how do you guys feel about that?
I think that one of the problems with the forces that are governing this world is they really think things through, and they are able to pull things off that are so like calculated. And sometimes it's sloppy, but even sometimes, like you're saying, the sloppiness of it, I'm like, was this intentional so
exactly.
that we would be misled?
Right.
Kind of like with this whole crisis actor thing. Like, I feel like that was sort of a, you know, a trap for conspiracy theorists, because you can't prove that. So when you're trying to argue a false flag event and say, well, these are actors, nobody's going to listen. Who's asleep? So it's things like that I'm like, it could be sloppy, but it also could be, you know, just that thorough in the planning.
Right.
And also there's this whole other, like, gosh, it's so difficult to deconstruct these things absolutely, because there seems to be like an occult aspect, and there's always numerology involved and a sacrificial element
and a supernatural possibly element.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know at what point like someone is in pulling those particular strings, or if it's just a byproduct of the perfect synchronicity of the universe or something. Like,
I was just gonna say because I just did the Sync Summit a couple weekends ago, and we were talking about this very thing, because this is something that needs to be addressed, because it seems like it's both and, you know, it's
right,
like there are synchronicities that happen within the world, but it's almost like this elite group of people, bloodline, whatever the hell it is, obviously are hip to this, that this is just kind of like a function of the universe. And this is, you know, that they're kind of working with it both ways. And that way that you have all these people that say, okay, well, it's just all Illuminati, as if the Illuminati controls when the sun rises and sets and when you take a shit tonight or something, you know what I mean? And it's like really kind of an absurdity to the whole thing, I think, you know?
Yeah, well, for instance, Illuminati. I mean, the way it seems to me, like, that became a buzzword, right? So that was something when I discovered the Illuminati, going down my, you know, obsessive YouTube internet craze. I discovered the Illuminati, and nobody knew what I was talking about. I bring it up, and nobody knew what the word was. And then more and more people were talking about it. So it's almost like some force stepped in and was like, okay, well, we're going to use this to our advantage now and really exploit this word Illuminati.
Yeah.
So now it's a joke. I mean, like,
it's a Twitter account now.
Right, exactly. And the symbolism is more than ever, and it's like so in our faces. And I feel like it's, you know, like these music videos and stuff that are just littered with it. It's almost like they know you see it, and they're just they lay it on really thick just to scare people. Just so they think like, wow, this is much. You know, we are here even more than you thought we were, and so people are like, oh my god, like Iwanani's in everything, and it's just almost a joke at this point.
Yeah. When.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So you guys, you know, I know a lot of people that went down this rabbit hole and they got lost. You know, I mean, obviously it seems like you guys grew up in like nuclear families, right? You know, white family, kind of privileged or whatever, just like me. Maybe your parents didn't make a whole lot of money or anything like that, but you know, you had food and water and clothing and all that stuff. And you say you're lighthearted guys. You've always been curious guys. And so I can see that that's why, you know, you were able to kind of fend off falling down the rabbit hole. I mean, is this what, do you think that comedy has helped you or your upbringing has helped you?
I think it's multiple things. I think one big thing is we've always had each other to talk to. I think a lot of people go through this alone.
Right.
You know, when they wake up, they don't have anybody to talk to. And also when you first become keen to this stuff, I mean, it's hard to stay relaxed and your first impulse is to tell other people. And when you don't have somebody who's in the same boat as you, you know, it's so hard to get other people to listen that it can be maddening and you can feel very alone. And I know just based off emails that we get how alone certain people feel going through this and how alienated they've become from people they used to know. And so we've been lucky to have each other and also Tony, who's on the couch right now,
yeah,
and others.
Yeah.
I mean, and then definitely through the creation of Joy Camp, now we have such a large community. But I think that's primarily like what's kept us sane is being able to talk. Whenever we learn something, we're able to talk about it.
Right.
Yeah.
And we do come from good families. We our parents actually live 10 minutes apart. And his parents are cool, and my parents are cool, and neither one of us come from privilege, that's for sure. We both come from, you know, the opposite end of that. And like, you know, I've had to work for everything I've gotten in my life.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't mean when I meant privilege, yeah.
No.
You know what I mean, though, yeah.
Totally but, where you're going with that.
Yeah.
But yes, we did come from nice families. There was food on the table, roof over the head, and very supportive on both ends of everything that we did, chose to do. Even if we didn't see eye to eye on things. I've certainly had my fair share of arguments with my father in particular about the way the world works, really. Mm-hmm. But that was a long time ago, and I've learned how to communicate better through comedy. Frankly.
Yeah, and almost immediately, if we're going on a rant or something, if I've just seen a documentary, read an article, or seen something on Facebook or whatever, I tend to rant, and it becomes silly. We're almost able to spot the absurdity of the situation almost immediately because
right.
This stuff is at a certain point. I mean, you have to laugh because it's so absurd.
Yeah.
It's just so glaringly obvious.
Yeah, it's insultingly obvious.
Yeah, there you go.
And. We end up laughing just out of hysteria almost, and then we're able to, you know, harness that into a joke that's palatable for other people. So we're able to always kind of joke about it, even if it's, like, driving us insane.
Yeah. I've talked to several different people, and I know I've had this experience myself. I talked to David Whitehead, who ran the Modern Knowledge Tour. Mark Passio has talked about this, I know, about going through a period of depression upon awakening, if you will. I mean, did you guys have this sort of thing? And I mean, was this something that was hard hitting that lasted, or you know what I mean?
You know, I think I still sometimes go into it.
That,
a couple weeks ago, going through the Israel-Palestine situation, and then also not having any outlet for the creativity, like we weren't filming anything back then.
Right.
I sunk and had to, you know, rebuild and regain strength and build myself back up. And, you know, it's just par for the course, I think. And that makes us human to really feel some of these things. And then it's also a call to action when you feel that sort of depression because you feel you have to find that fire inside of you that has the strength to overcome it. So, yeah, I mean, it was worse in the past. I mean, definitely before Joy Camp and we were, you know, just plummeting down the rabbit hole. And especially during things like the Obama election the first time around, so hard to talk to people about that. And
isn't that insane?
Yeah.
I
mean, yeah, so, it's like you can't bring up Obama and the absurdity of Obama and the drones and all, you know, right. All the natural law rights that are being whittled away. And people are like, oh, what are you, a teabagger? That sort of thing. It's just insane.
how do you define the word terrorism? I mean, whose definition are we using?
Yep. People love a good psychopath these days, you know? There's that was why we did the Emmy video. I mean, one of the big reasons was for, you know, a couple of years we've been talking about how psychopaths, a lot of successful shows on television, the main character is a likable psychopath, just a complete likable psychopath, you know, like we named in the video, Bryan Cranston.
Walter White.
And, you know, this year there was Billy Bob Thornton, I don't remember exactly the name, but in the show Fargo, and Kevin Spacey in House of Cards, and, you know, Dexter.
There's
The Sopranos. I mean, there's so many shows where they just glorify psychopaths. And it's kind of like, the people that run the world clearly are psychopaths or that are controlling things. But yet all these people that are blind to it, they like them. They don't care that they drop drone bombs and missiles and bomb the hell out of the Palestinians.
Well, it's because
they don't care.
They're too concerned with their own lives. I mean, people are so locked into their, you know, to their career and their mortgage and their debt and their wives and their car payments and all this stuff. That's like they don't have time to worry about. And yet getting these things like, you know, a new iPhone or a TV or being able to watch television. These are these great perks that make it all worth it, and therefore it's not we don't have to pay attention to the rest of the world because it's over there.
And meanwhile, on the other side, everybody who is aware of what's going on in the world and can see obvious fixes to certain things, all we need is those people, right, to come along with us and change what's going on in the world. But it's so frustrating when they don't, and that's why all these years prior to making these videos, it was 10 times more frustrating because you're just, at that point, all you have is your voice, you know, and you're shouting at someone else on the other side of the road, and it didn't work. Like I said earlier, I did it with my dad for a long time, then we make a video and show him about something we argued about for years, and there he is laughing on the other side, and we can have, you know, a nice conversation about it. So to bring it all full circle, that's so much of what we do.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that comedy does is helps people unpack really touchy subjects, you know, topics, you know, using humor. And I mean, that's obviously kind of your goal with Joy Camp, right? Was to try to help open people's minds. And has that worked? Have you had people contact you and say, hey, thank you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, several, actually. Yeah. And another good thing is that people who are not, quote unquote, awake, who see the video, even if they don't, it doesn't change their mind about it. They don't have an adverse reaction. They don't get angry, at least not to our faces anyway.
Yeah.
I haven't experienced any firsthand backlash, even to my most asleep friends. I mean, people will watch videos and still be able to kind of chuckle and whatever, but it doesn't seem to offend people, which I think is really important.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So when you guys, I got a kind of a personal question for you, because when I first started putting out YouTube videos, in the comment section, you'd always get these just outrageous comments like, oh, you guys are a bunch of fucking fags. You know what I mean? This kind of thing. And when I first started putting out videos, it offended me. Like, I got hurt. And now after a while, I just got used to it. And like, it doesn't faze me at all. Do you guys still get like those comments where you're just like, God, you know, you get really pissed off, or do you guys just blow it off, or?
Yeah, you know, what's cool is that most of the time when I have that reaction and I let it go, somebody else, like another fan or somebody else, says exactly like what I wanted to say, and they just do it for us, which is always great. So it's like, oh, cool, thank you. Now I don't have to do that.
Because obviously you've got smart fans.
Yeah, I mean, the one for me,
we're good.
because we all have to make money in this system somehow. I mean, I act in commercials from time to time, something that I don't want to do forever, but it pays me and whatever. It's been my job. And some people had a negative reaction to seeing me in a commercial when they were watching TV, and I got some pretty shitty messages that were really unfair. I was able to sort of steer it, and I talked to them about it, but yeah, that did affect me a little bit, and having to sort of figure out how to handle that and how to reply. And yeah.
And how do you handle it now? I mean, do you just kind of let it go?
Well, I explained it almost like I just explained here. I basically said, you know, this is something that I'm doing to stay afloat in this society. And if you like Joy Camp, you just have to trust that my heart's in the right place. And this money is keeping me from having to get a job that would keep me from being able to do these videos. So this is going. It's how I'm staying alive. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't have it, then everything else would crumble.
So besides the occasional acting gig or whatever, do you guys have full-time jobs at all, part-time jobs? I mean, or is this, how do you guys?
I did my whole, pretty much since I was like 15 years old, I had so many, I come from a very blue-collar, working class family where my dad really instilled it in me at a young age to work hard, to work really, really hard. That's how he did it. And it was great. He gave me a lot of really good work ethic. And he really taught me that if you're going to do a job, do it right and see it all the way through. So I worked as a movie theater projectionist and cleaning movie theater floors. That's where I met Tony, was being a projectionist at a theater. And I worked at a video store and I worked at a record store. And I had a job for a long time with a hotel company up until just this year, actually. I was working from home and sort of editing with Joy Camp the last couple of years in all my free time, nights and weekends. And because I did that and got pretty good at editing, I was able to leave my other job and find work making editing bullshit videos here in LA.
So. And I was a, my first 3 years here in LA, I was a middle school teacher. I was an arts teacher.
Oh, really?
And yeah. And I would still be doing it. But they cut the arts program at the school I was working at last year. And luckily it came at a time for me when I was making enough money through the commercial work that I didn't need it. But that's what I did. That was my day job for 3 years.
So the goal, obviously, is that, we do this full time and not have to worry about that other shit. And we're just doing everything we can one day at a time, one project at a time, one whatever at a time with, that goal in mind.
With little to no money.
Yeah, yeah. I'm in that boat, man.
all are, though.
Yeah, right.
Most of us. Most of us
there's
are.
No money in truth telling.
No.
Yeah, right?
No. Not yet, anyway.
Well, I'm going to make like $400 on my book sales this month, so.
Yeah. Gotta get rid of money.
Yeah.
Let's get rid of the money and still be able to survive in this world.
Benny, you were saying about like how your parents instilled in you like work ethic and things like that. And I know that, the sole reason I would say that I'm successful is that my parents were supportive of me, man. They pushed me, they gave me good work ethic and things like that. And I look back at that and even look to now, they're still supportive of me. And it's like, I think that is the sole reason that I've succeeded at all. And when we were talking earlier about like psychopaths, that people love psychopaths or whatever, I often wonder, and I want to get your take on this, is if you replaced those psychopaths as the lead characters with good, loving hearted people, people that had good work ethic. I mean, do you think that would absolutely change our society?
Yeah, absolutely. There'd be a lot of other factors to go and play, but of course, man, it's a lead by example. I think, yeah. When you have, someone said that there's 300 families out there controlling the world. And all it would really take is another 300 families of, like you said, good, smart, intelligent people to replace these psychopaths and change things.
Yeah, that's a tricky question, though, because I loved The Sopranos, and I loved Breaking Bad, and I actually liked Dexter for a few years, so I liked these shows where they featured a psychopath. So I think there's room, possibly, for both. I think the problem is, more changing the forces that are governing Hollywood, taking some control back in the creative department so we'd have more freedom. But I guess there could still be room for a...
But you're speaking of like a TV show wise, like Hollywood. Okay, I thought you were pulling it out of Hollywood for a minute there. So maybe that's both answers to the question.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, go on. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, drama is obviously what makes something interesting, right? The ups and the downs, the high tides, the low tides, the good and the evil, of course. So it's not like we're just like, oh, we're just going to make, videos with unicorns and rainbows, and that's what it's going to be on TV. No, obviously we need some conflict and things like that. But as you guys were saying, it's almost like our TV is saturated with this evil, psychopathic content, if you will.
Right.
Coupled with everything else that it's
And I feel like a lot of the comedy is really stupid. It's just dumb base humor. I think we could definitely improve in the comedic department on television. And also, the main channels, the network channels, so much. It's always cop show, lawyer show. Cop, lawyer, and what's the third one? Doctor, hospital show, hospital dramas. these dominate always, always, always. I think you could get rid of those and make it more, I don't know, though, because then you get, when you go into like wholesome territory, then you get cheesy, then you get like,
yeah,
you know, American propaganda bullshit.
So,
basically, we need to reinvent Hollywood altogether.
Basically, the moral of the story. Yeah, get rid of it, start it from scratch. But outside of Hollywood, which is, I guess, more along the lines of what I was intending to speak about earlier, was that if we did replace the psychopaths with good people, those people could lead by example. But man, they are really smart. You know, I've learned that over the years. Like, Stanley Kubrick, his favorite thing was chess. He loved the game of chess. Sure. And I always go back to that metaphor of chess with what's going on. And I, you know, as long as I've been aware of this stuff, I've always felt like I've been up against a grandmaster chess player that's just like always 10 steps ahead, you know? So it's tough, man.
But what keeps me, feeling positive about it is that nothing is in stone, right? We are living, right. we can create a different future if various...
If there could be a Lifetime original movie about the Joy Camp is basically what you're saying.
Right. Yeah, definitely Lifetime too.
But what do these people have to gain? I mean, the ones who are in control, I mean, what are they going to do if they finally get what they want? They're going to have a dead or diseased population, a dead or diseased Earth. What is there to inherit? What do they have left? They have the money that they created themselves out of thin air. They have all the wealth. What then? Like, what is this ultimately all about?
What do you think they want? I mean, do you think that they have an end goal? What's that?
I said it feels like they have momentum towards something. I feel like we're at some sort of like, you know, it feels like a pimple that's about to pop. There's something there is a super objective, and I don't know what it is. And that's when you get really confused going down the rabbit hole and looking at the bloodlines and, you know, the tribes and where they went and where the information got lost and who the secret societies are and who's all that and aliens and who knows what. But I don't know.
I know.
They want chaos, that's for sure. They want certain things for themselves and not for other people, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. From there, I don't know.
If I said I knew the answer to that, I'd have to sell it to you probably. You know.
Yeah, and if I knew the answer to that, we'd probably be suicided.
Yeah, tonight. Exactly. So I don't, you know, one day at a time. I just try to find as much balance as I can in my life, and always be learning.
Well, what do you think?
What do you?
Do you
think?
Have an idea about what their ultimate goal is? Whoever they are.
Yes, I honestly I do, but it's we only have about 15 minutes left, and we don't have enough time to go into it. You know, I mean, I think honestly, it's you know, when you have the concept of to put it succinctly, I mean, if you have the concept of as above and so below, basically that this thing is a hologram, it's an illusion, you know, and therefore when we look out into the stars, what we're looking out into is a projection of our own minds, if you will, it's a projection of our own mental states or whatever, and so it's the idea of to me, to put it as short as I can, if you control the Earth, basically what you're doing is controlling the universe, because that's all there, if you will. Excuse me, that's all there is the as above and the so below, and it actually kind of comes together into the one central point that is the human consciousness, and that's why, in my opinion, that you've had this group of people that have tried to control the world, because by controlling the world, you're essentially playing God.
Mm. Yeah, I get that, man. That makes sense. It really does.
And therefore, I mean, that's why it feels like when thinking about a solution or contemplating a solution or really trying to figure out a way to change things, I feel like the themes that always come up are fix yourself and build a community. Fix yourself, build a community. And it really comes back to the one. I mean, as far down the rabbit holes I've gone, it's all led me back to myself and, you know, bringing my own shadow to light and healing myself and really breaking myself 100% or as much as possible from all the shit, all the ties that bind. And then also, then from there, it's that ripple and bringing people together and building community and trust. Yeah.
And I mean, one of the greatest ways to do that, I think, is laughter, too, because laughter is very, I mean, it's unique to the human being, because no animals laugh, you know. I mean, it's like there's animals that have opposable thumbs, there's animals that manipulate the material world, there's, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But the one thing that the human being has is this ability to laugh.
Right.
And so it becomes this medicine in a way.
And that's probably why, you know, we were so fortunate to have the group form that we have, because everybody in the group really does love to laugh and, you know, likes to dick around all the time. So it just sort of worked out in that regard, and hopefully it can happen for other people too. I mean, I think it has to happen at this point.
And hopefully it keeps building.
Right.
It's not like we're, you know, blowing up that much. We have a decent fan base and we get a decent amount of views, but you know, in 2.5 years we haven't, like I said, blown up. So we have to really focus on that and how important the humor is, just so we don't get discouraged sometimes.
Right.
Yeah, this is something I really wanted to ask you guys too. And like, I mean, I don't want to like offend you or anything, but I mean, with the subjects that you're covering, I'm guessing you guys aren't really going to get a shot, you know, on a mainstream media TV show. I mean, it's not like NBC is going to put you in their fall lineup or anything, right? Am I incorrect in this, or no? I mean, right?
Well, we're working on a pilot to pitch to TV with the guidance of somebody who works in the business.
Really?
Right. So we can, you know, we're trying. We're gonna go as far as we can with getting that done and seeing what happens. But
we're not on mainstream TV, but we've definitely been introduced to people as a result of our videos. Who, there are a few people out here in Hollywood that do get it, you know.
Yeah,
and we seem to have found some of those people, which is pretty cool.
Like I said, our work, even if you don't agree with it, doesn't seem to offend people very much. And there is it is becoming more popular. Like there's something, sure, it's in the air. Like the comedy that we're doing is so necessary. That's what comedy is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a reflection of the times, sure, and it's like it's like the Fool in Shakespeare. So I feel like there is an audience for that, and if we can harness it correctly, I think that there could possibly be a break. We could, you know, maybe it's not on television, but it could be through a supported internet situation or something. The sky's the limit. I mean, I think we could break through with what we're doing.
And there are things, you know, there are shows and movies and things that kind of come and go that where you could tell the person that made it or wrote it or directed is of a similar mindset, and they're smart and they're awake and they're aware, and they, like, you know, anybody that's a fan of Kubrick, we don't need to get into that because I could sit here and talk for hours about it, but watch his movies. And you know, most recently I've seen the movie Boyhood twice, and I don't know if you've gone to see that movie yet.
No, I haven't.
But the movie's incredible. It's absolutely incredible for all the technical reasons and everything about that movie, but essentially it follows a kid, an actual kid over the course of 12 years who is always sort of disassociated with reality, and he basically goes through an awakening. But it's done in a very, very subtle way. And Richard Linklater, the director of that movie, is obviously a very smart, intelligent guy, and you can look at some of his other movies.
Yeah, I love that director. Yeah.
Yeah, me too, man. He's my favorite. And so there are people doing it, and we can learn lessons from those people because they do it in a subtle way. It's like, I've been thinking about a lot lately. It's almost like taking their playbook, right? The people that use the propaganda against us and making it work to your advantage. We don't have hundreds of millions of dollars that we can just start our own network and get millions of people to see the stuff. So you got to use the tools that you work with, or that you have to work with, and just try to maneuver. And we don't have the answer. We just take it one day at a time and keep pushing forward, basically.
And then, ultimately, it'd be the ultimate solution to the media, or the, how do I say, entertainment aspect, is to get it away from the Zionist control. Figure that out.
Yeah, figure that one out and then get back to us.
Yeah, I mean, besides that, it seems like you guys could really fit in. I mean, with, like, you know, Comedy Central, things like that. I mean, you know, the Dave Chappelle show, they touched on really touchy subjects, but it was smart and funny, and it seems like you guys would fit right in there, even though I don't watch TV at all, but I know that there's a lot of shit shows on Comedy Central, too, so.
Right. That's why we're trying to construct it just right, and we have the guidance of somebody who's been working in Hollywood as a producer for a long time, and, you know, he flat out rejected our first script because he's like, you can't, this is too much. Yeah, you start off, yeah, this could be, you know, this could be an episode later on, but at first, you know, you gotta, I don't want to say lighten it up, but be a little more clever in how you're presenting it, so it doesn't, you don't, so they'll actually watch it.
Yeah,
they're actually like, okay, this is too much, this is not going on TV.
We were like, that's what we wanted, to ram it down their throats, but he was like, chill out.
Yeah, there's time
there's a time, cool, and a place for that. Cool. But he gets it, he's smart, he's aware of this stuff, he thinks it's becoming more relevant too, and I hate using the word, but trendy, I guess. But in our eyes, it's like, if the bigger the audience we can get, the better, because we know that we have an important message to get out there, and we have a way of disguising it in humor, and we follow smart people. You know, we're not these like fantastic researchers that write all these books and do all these amazing documentaries and stuff. We gain from those people. We wouldn't exist without people like that. We just communicate the message, and we want to communicate it to the people that are still asleep. You know, we want to snap those people awake because we need those people. They're cheap. Yeah, sure, we can call them names, but we need those people to change things. We do.
Yeah.
So that's well where said. We're at right now. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's where we're at. We're working on it. That's why we hadn't put up a video on YouTube for a couple months, and some people were a little upset with that, which was kind of a nice, flattering feeling. We've been working on that, and we actually worked on a short film.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you guys want to talk about that a little bit? Like what it's about?
Yeah, man. It's a short film. We entered it into a contest for Sundance. So we'll find out the announcement on that soon. That's why we're holding off on putting it out there, because we're waiting for the results of this, because if it gets up there, you know, you have to wait and release it at the festival. So we'll see what happens. But it's on the theme of hunger and poverty, basically. And we're recalling some old characters from a past video. We have some photos on our Facebook and stuff, but we spent a lot of time doing that, a lot of time, and we're really proud of the finished product. So hopefully we'll be able to share that soon. We'll keep it posted.
Yeah, when you do, let me know. I will definitely share it. So,
awesome.
So yeah, we're almost out of time here. So, but one final question here. When are you guys going to do a video on gematria or sacred geometry?
when we become smart enough.
Yeah, when I don't feel like such an idiot. Sacred geometry.
I know. You guys, man, I see your posts. I see you and Cameron, all the sacred geometry posts, and I try my best to follow, and I've tried to get into this stuff, and I know this much in that world, and I want to feel like I'm a little bit more researched on the subject before we do make a video about it.
Well, we brought it up in a one-liner in a video. Joy Camp Takes On. We mentioned sacred geometry.
Yeah, we have the whole, sure. You know, as above, so below, you know, sort of
the axiom in there.
Yeah, and in our
astrotheology
video.
Yeah, for
so,
sure.
So soon.
Yeah,
awesome. It's on the list. Too soon. One of the perks of alternative ideas and conspiracies, if you will, is that it never ends. There's an unlimited supply of topics.
Fortunately and unfortunately.
Yeah, fortunately for us.
Unfortunately for the rest of the world.
Hey, one quick question. Is there anything you guys won't touch? Is there anything that you're like, I just can't go there?
Yeah, so far. The one big thing is, I'll sort of try to say it in a nice, subtle way. Like, some of the lies were about World War II.
Right.
Some of the stories that we've all come to know about the winners and the losers of that war. And certain things in health. Something like, let's say, HIV or cancer or things like that are pretty hard,
right.
To
AIDS and
to make light of so far.
Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, is a documentary. I don't want to say it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, is a 6-hour documentary that we watched, and without saying more, we wanted to make a video on it, but we just don't think that where our mind goes with that video will be appropriate for audiences. So, yeah, that one. But then, you know, I had a nice email conversation with Henrik from Red Ice. And, you know, in there he said, stay brave and fear no topic. And I know he's right. I know he's right. But there is a time and a place. So
sure.
We'll just keep working and releasing things as they see fit, I think.
Okay, cool. And are you guys going to do the ALS ice bucket challenge?
Oh, it's so funny you say that. Tony on the couch over here has been talking about making a parody of that.
Right. Yeah, we had a couple of ideas for it.
I know. I just posted something on Facebook today. I said it was like, hey, the next challenge for the next neurological disorder is going to be the boiling water challenge.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's pretty good.
I'd say the lighting yourself on fire challenge, but I feel like that was already a trend a couple of weeks ago. So... I don't know. I mean, the problem with making a video on that is that it's going to be dead in a couple of days.
It is,
and
yeah.
Everyone's going to forget about it. It's going to be like the Harlem Shake. Like, what? What? The Harlem what?
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be the same thing. So I hope the intentions are right and the cause is good, so I don't piss anybody off listening to it. I hope. But usually when things like that happen, I always smell bullshit. You know, I can't help it. I'm sorry.
Of course, dude. It's just skeptical, you know? It's on TV. It's, and you have the question.
A bunch of celebrities are doing it. When Oprah does something, come on. Like, come on. There's got to be some bullshit going on in there, right?
I know. Steve-O just posted something about, you know, because people were attacking him because he made fun of it. And he's just like, hey, you guys only raised 15, I think it was 15 or $10 million. I'm not sure which one. But I'm like, you had like Lady Gaga and George Bush and you had like all, you know, all of these huge celebrities or people in, you know, the public eye that obviously have millions of dollars and you only raised $15 million. It's like pretty insane, you know?
Good point, you know, and then I saw the one that Charlie Sheen did where he
which is funny
and he tips it over and then $10,000 falls out over top of him and he says, oh wait, actually here's $10,000 and I'm going to donate and do something for real
instead
of just dumping water on my head. So I mean, hey, love him or hate him, I thought that was kind of cool.
It's funny. All right, guys, that is about up for us, man. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to talk with me. I like I said, I love your work, and yeah, just keep doing what you're doing, and yeah, keep pushing the envelope, you know, because it's needed right now. We need some laughter in these dark times, so I really appreciate it, man.
Thanks, man.
So, appreciate it.
And the listeners, please give these guys, check out their site, check out their YouTube. Hey, do you guys want to say where you guys can get a hold of you and all that?
Sure. Yeah, thejoycamp.com, youtube.com/thejoycamp, Facebook/thejoycamp, Twitter/thejoycamp.
Cool. Yeah, it's only the Joy Camp because we couldn't secure just the one word Joy Camp.
Right.
So
yeah.
We got to deal with the of our name.
It comes from this book actually right here. I don't know if you can see that.
No, I can't. The video feed actually went out about 10 minutes ago. So what is the book?
It's George Orwell's 1984. That's where Joy Camp comes from.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Oh, interesting. Oh, cool. So
forced labor camp. George Orwell. Thank you very much.
Cool. Yeah, but if anybody listening, if you like our videos, please share them, send them around. We can definitely use more viewership, and we feel like it's important. And if you have a couple bucks to spare, we are literally working off a shoestring budget, so anything helps, and it goes towards, you know, good videos.
Yeah, you can find the links under our videos. There's a donate link on our channel. It's all there, all in the right place.
All right, so you heard it, man. You know, cancel your cable subscription to NBC, ABC, CBS, all that, and go check these guys out. Give them $20, $30, whatever you can give them, man, and help support funny and engaging content. Guys, thanks so much once again for coming on. Please keep up the great work, and God knows we need some humor. So thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. The outro song is called Poor Dead Thing off the record Everyday Ghost and is provided by Portland, Oregon's The Druthers. This band is just phenomenal. They put on a hell of a show, and the female vocalist Erin Atkinson's voice will make you weep. It's just so full of passion and heart, and the harmonies between her and Kirk Duncan are fantastic. If you live in the Pacific Northwest, please check them out. You will not be disappointed, and you can purchase their record on iTunes. You can like them on Facebook, and their website is www.thedruthers.com. Coming up in the next few episodes of the Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour include interviews with author of Astro Music, Ezra Sanzer-Bell, vortex-based mathematician Randy Powell, poet Holly McNish, and the author of The State is Out of Date, Gregory Sams. Make sure to stay tuned, and always remember, an opinion without pie is just an onion. Thanks. Such a death thing.
do you say La Magnifique? It's withering here. Your mind is a bee.
Your heart is a buzz.
Are you gonna A-E-I-O-U? Why when I was? Oh, won't you keep me like a greenhouse fly? Water my bones and let me sleep for hours. Put me outside under a portland shower. Swirling like spring. I'm such a dead thing.
Listening to the Marty Leeds Mathmagical Radio Hour. More information about the work of Marty Leeds can be found at MartyLeeds33.com. You can download his full-length studio record, Opus Medico Musica, from iTunes or Amazon.com, and be sure and check out his books, Pi and the English Alphabet, Volume 1 and 2, and The Peacock's Tales, available at MartyLeeds33.com and Amazon. For hours of free video, check out his YouTube channel at MartyLeeds33. More information about SyncBook Press, SyncBook Radio, or SyncBook Events can be found at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast, please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website and consider setting up a monthly charge. Thanks so much, and though some people think it's a piece of cake, we all know it's easy as pie.